Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Phoning It In, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. With each broadcast, your hosts bring you the latest news and information from professional wrestling in Georgia and around the Southeast. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Phoning It In, with your hosts Larry Goodman, Murder One, and Trent Van Dries.
Johnny Gaten is out of the ring as a wrestler to stay. This is Phoning It In right here on the GWH Radio Network, of course, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. And I am Notre Dame himself, Trent Van Dries. And what a show we have for you tonight. In our first hour tonight, we have for you fans in Nashville, Tennessee, pretty much a legend, I would say, a Nashville wrestler at this point. Jeff the Crippler Daniels will be on in the first hour. And also his lovely sidekick partner, Dominique, will be joining us as well. And I don't believe Dominique has ever done an interview, so it should be interesting. Our friend Chicken Hat Charles, also along in the first hour, telling us how he would fix the wrestling business. Can't wait for that. And in our second hour, we will be joined by Taylor McKnight, formerly of Great Championship Wrestling, and apparently Mr. McKnight has quite a tale to tell from his time there, as well as some other projects he's involved in, so you fans in Georgia should be enjoying that. So right now I'm going to turn it over to the man behind the switchboard, the Norcross legend, yes, legend, Scary Larry Goodman. What's up, Larry?
I've advanced to legend status, huh?
I would, if Jeff Daniels is a legend, I would say you are too, I would say. Yes.
Well, let me give send a shout out to my sister. Happy birthday to my sister. This is her day, Marla. Enjoying her. What is this would be for her 55th birthday? Wow. So anyway, yeah. Been a busy time here. 3 shows in 5 days for me. Of course, the final one being the Gaten Memorial, where we saw our co-host Murder One. And AJ Steele crowned as the new NWA World Tag Team Champions. Of course, we're going to have to wait. Apparently, he wants a grand special entrance because he has not arrived here yet. So we will just have to await his arrival. But, yeah, three shows in 5 days. They were all pretty good. But the Rampage show was really excellent. It was the best of their shows that I've been to. The Rave Matthews cage match was really top-notch stuff.
And we also had how many title changes were there? NWA World Tag Team title changes, and Bo Buchanan.
Yes,
defeated J-Rod.
The RPW heavyweight title changed hands, right?
Quite a show.
Since we were last on the air, the NWA World Heavyweight title changed hands to the Sheik, taking it from Colt Cabana.
Right. Very, very interesting. Well, and isn't it perfect that show was named the Gaten Memorial? Oh, the Gaten Memorial. Last time we did a show, Dr. Johnny Gaten out here boasting, bragging, saying he was going to beat the judge. I knew better. And now, I also understand at the show, Larry, that for his final act as general manager, Sal Rinaro went bad. So this opens the door for a commissioner, a general manager. Could that be filled by Dr. Eyeball himself?
I'd say there's a strong possibility of that, yes.
And who suggested that?
I believe that was you that suggested that, on the air 2 weeks ago. Yeah, yeah, that would be you.
I just want to say to professional wrestling, especially in Georgia, but just professional wrestling, you're welcome. Because obviously, as of 2 weeks ago, Gaten was going to win that match. Because I noticed there was, in your report, Larry, there was even signs that apparently Dr. Gaten has never lost at a major show. Gee, I wonder
That's
why.
Right. That's right. He was 6-0 in major shows.
He has now. So I'm telling you, before he did that show with us, he was going to win that match too. So, and the judge can take all the credit he wants. I don't care. Ramadanis, you unmasked, you're the judge. But I am the one that actually knocked Dr. Johnny Gaten out of a wrestling ring. And wrestling fans everywhere should rejoice at that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
No, you're welcome.
And we're now joined by the new NWA World Tag Team Champion himself, Mr. Murder One. Welcome to the show and congratulations,
oh,
champ.
Oh!
Say it again.
Well, congratulations, champ.
Say the title again.
The NWA World, one half of the NWA World Tag Team Champions, the usual suspects.
World.
Larry, fire up a round of applause.
Yes.
Do we not get a sound effects thing for, like, applause? Yes. No party music or nothing?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. So, Murder One, how does it feel to be a world, an NWA world champion?
You know what? For real, it really didn't hit me until, like, this morning when I woke up and went to get something to eat in the belt was sitting on the couch. I was like, shit. I looked at it, I was like, fuck, I won the world tag titles last night, man. This is awesome. Then my phone blew up and everybody was wishing me well and all that good stuff.
How does it feel to know that you robbed your own friend to take the title?
I didn't rob my friend. What would an NWA title match be without a little controversy?
Of course.
Right.
Of course. You know what
I mean? How does it feel to know that I am the man that knocked Dr. Johnny Gaten out of professional wrestling forever, at least as an active wrestler?
How did you do that?
Because, as I was just saying before you got on the line, I read Larry's reports, there were signs in the crowd commemorating Dr. Gaten for being undefeated at big shows. Like I said, Dr. Gaten never loses. As of 2 weeks ago, I know in my bones that he was going to win that match and put himself over. But I planted seeds of doubt in his mind. I made him think about that thing, and he had a change of heart. I am the one that knocked Dr. Gaten out of professional wrestling as an active in-ring competitor. Yeah, and you're welcome.
If you want to think that, you can.
I am.
You think that. Enjoy yourself with that.
But
you know what? You know what makes this even sweeter though?
What?
Is when I heard the three, even with the little controversy bullshit that went down with it, first thing that popped in my mind was, you know, I just won the title that Sweet Stan and Bobby Eaton held numerous times.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was just gonna bring that up. I mean, what must that feel like to hold it? The titles that the Midnight Express held.
I feel like a king. I do. When I just look at that, you know, like,
wait a minute, but didn't Dennis Condrey also hold those titles?
See, why you gotta spoil my moment, man?
I'm not just saying.
You're trying to spoil my moment. That's all you're trying to do, bro.
No, I actually, you're pretty high cotton. That's pretty strong company holding the belt that Dennis Condrey held.
And Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's good stuff. And the Rock and Roll Express. We'll go ahead and throw that up.
And our first guest tonight, Jeff the Crippler Daniels, is also a former NWA World Tag Team Champion.
Yes, he is.
So we can have the champion talk.
Exactly, exactly. Hey, Larry, I got to drop off just a few minutes. I'll be back, though.
All right.
Okay.
Where is the chick? Is it the chicken hat time?
I believe it is.
Or did he punk out because he didn't have anything good to say?
Well, let's see.
Let's run this.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, enough of that. Welcome to Chickenhead Charles.
Hello.
And the bottom
Hello,
line.
Everyone.
Hello.
Well, well, it's me. Now, a couple of weeks ago, you have, I think it was Murder One who gave me this assignment on how I, if I were a wrestling god, how would I change wrestling?
Yes,
well,
it was me.
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of ideas running. Number one, we'll start with the WWE. I would make the Raw and SmackDown brands separate, because the one thing I've noticed about this is they've been interacting, which I guess is okay on the pay-per-views, but not on the regular shows. They need, if they are going to be, if these brands are going to be taken seriously, they need to start acting independently. Now, for TNA, one problem I've noticed is a certain two people who's been running roughshod. Well, you know who I'm talking about, don't you?
I don't
Well, anyway.
Oh.
Well, let's face it. They're not doing it. I'd get rid of them. They're not doing anything for it. They need, I mean, let's face it. What worked on Nitro back in 1996 ain't working now. I've known this for a while. Now, for the NWA, I've been hearing lots of stuff about NWA, and I feel they need exposure. And I mean, kind of like what the old NWA was when it first started. By that, I mean television. They should have a nationally syndicated program spotlighting their certain feds. They could have it on every week. They could, well, they, it's more like touring. Well, I don't mean touring, but they could do it like region from region every week. That way they could keep their little tradition of contributing. Kind of like back in the day when NWA was thriving. Okay, what else?
Let me ask you this real quick, though. Did you know that I'm the NWA World Tag Team Champion?
Yes, I've heard, and congratulations on that.
You heard, you weren't even going to say nothing nice. I was being nice to you today.
Well, yes, I've heard. I wasn't sure you would want me to comment on that.
Oh, yes, because I'm fixing wrestling. I'm doing your work, wrestling god. I'm fixing it for you.
Really? Really? Well, I would. And speaking of which, another thing I'd like to bring up is titles. Not just WWE, TNA, or NWA, or maybe Ring of Honor. I would suggest that these champions defend their titles at least once a month. This way, we all know they will be fighting champions. I mean, let's face it. We all know most of the time some champions will find some cheap way to escape that, but that will not happen. I will not make it happen, basically. They either do it once a month or they're gone. Their titles are gone. The only way you're going to prove you're a fighting champion is that you actually fight for them.
Charles, I'm a little bit worried. I agree with every point you made. I mean, they all made a whole lot of... What do you think, Murder?
I'm like, what the... You're right. I have to tell you, you're right. Really. God damn, I'm serious. You're on point with this, Charles. People should listen to this. This is your day right here. You should bask too, because you were totally right. Everything you've said. I honestly, man, you really put some time into this, didn't you?
Yes, I've been thinking about it all the while the last couple of weeks, basically off and on. And of course, I've been observing what was on wrestling on TV. That's been mostly my inspiration.
Well, wrestling guy, could I ask you a favor then?
Yeah.
But all that stuff that you're fixing, could you get rid of Tough Enough?
Well, Tough Enough, this is more like I'm not sure about Tough Enough, because basically it behaves like all reality shows. And if you have to get rid, I would have to get all of the reality shows. Mostly the ones that have celebrities profiling. I mean, who in the hell cares what celebrities do on their downtime? I mean, don't they get enough media coverage anyway?
You are so right. I'm glad that, you know what, for what you just did, I'm not even gonna assign you a task for the next show. You can just talk about whatever you want to talk about. You've proven yourself, Charles.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you finally saw that.
Yes.
I admit I was a little nervous the first couple of weeks, but I really did think this through.
Hey,
Charles, before we let you go, you may have heard that our first guests coming on tonight are Jeff Daniels and Dominique. And being the longtime Nashville wrestling fan that you are, I wondered what your thoughts were on Jeff and Dominique.
Well, Jeff, I have to admit, he is a talented wrestler. He has the greatest moves ever. I've seen him wrestle many times. However, sometimes he'll take shortcuts, and I really don't think he needs to do that. He does have the talent, and he should not squander it. As far as Dominique goes, I have a few things to say about her. However, I'm going to keep those. In the better interest, I will keep those to myself.
Oh, come on.
Believe me. Well, let me put it like this. She makes Auntie Nim look friendly. I mean, let's face it. Everyone calls her beautiful. Please. I've seen lady wrestlers that act better than her, even Awesome Kong. And she's not a beauty. Of course, then again, wrestling is not really pretty. I mean, nobody ever said that.
You're like a card-carrying member of No Ma'am, aren't you?
Well, I'm not saying that all lady women should be in wrestling. However, I would appreciate better if they would dress decently. I mean, you've ever noticed most of the lady wrestlers dress like hookers?
That's what I like.
Well, if I wanted to see women in various states of undress, I'd either watch one of those nudie bar pay-per-views or a Benny Hill show rerun.
Hey, you like Benny Hill?
Oh, I think he's funny. I haven't seen him in a while, but he does get away with things you would never, most network TVs here in the U.S. would never allow. I don't know how that is.
Benny Hill, is Benny Hill still even on the air?
I wish he was.
Well, I haven't, the last time I heard of him, he was on BBC America. Of course, he hasn't been there in a while.
If you would have told me you liked Benny Hill from the first day we met, we would have such a beautiful friendship right now. I think that your music, instead of that stuff that we play for you, I think it should be the Benny Hill song from now on.
Oh, that would be good. I didn't really like that music anyway, because, well...
When I hear it, I think about an old bald-headed man chasing around scantily clad women.
Chickenhead, your wish is my command. Your music will be the Benny Hill theme next time around if I can get a hold of it.
I'll get it for you. And don't forget, before you sign off, you know what you got to say.
Okay. Till next time, Earth, stay classy.
That'll work.
Oh, it was close.
Say, Earth, stay classy. Just do what he says.
Hey, Earth, stay classy. Got it.
Stay classy, planet Earth, but I like that one too.
Okay.
Am I on?
You are.
You're on.
I come back to hear talk of hookers and Benny Hill.
Hey, Charles was very diplomatic tonight, and he took his assignment very seriously.
I can't wait to hear it because I missed most of it. By the way, the Benny Hill theme is known as Yakety Sax.
And why would you know that?
Well, because I'm a musical expert. I'm on TV every Sunday night. And I do have one question for you, Charles. I want to know your opinion of Jeff the Crippler Daniels and Dominique, because they're coming on the line in just a few minutes.
We did that.
He already went off.
Oh, sorry. Well, go carry on then.
Well, we're going to go to a commercial break, and then we're going to bring back. We're going to bring Jeff and Dominique on the show.
We got commercials now.
Yeah, we got. We're moving up in class here, Murder.
Holy, you got commercials.
Yeah,
we're Rich Tate on you.
We're going Rich Tate. That's right.
Okay, who's this commercial from?
We'll see.
You're
listening
know.
To the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia wrestling history? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today. And not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
I like how the robot lady just came and made a commercial.
Wasn't that nice of her?
That was very nice of you, robot lady.
That was Jen Holbrook.
I know who the robot lady is. You just spoiled it to everybody now.
Oh,
I know Jen Holbrook.
Sorry.
It's okay.
It's also kind of strange that you and Chickenhead are all of a sudden being so chummy when I come back.
He said he liked Benny Hill, man. You can't just turn that down.
That's key to your heart is Benny Hill. Who knew? Okay, there you go.
We're joined now by a true wrestling legend. A Nashville wrestling legend, and hopefully his better half is with him as well, the Crippler Jeff Daniels and Dominique. Welcome to the show.
Guys, how's it going?
Hello.
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 Can you hear us?
Good morning, Vietnam.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
What was that?
What are you doing?
What is that, Trent? Is that something in your car?
I'm just driving in the rain and making money, but carry on. Go ahead. I'm fine.
Well, thanks a lot for doing the show, for starters. You know, I'm always curious to hear about people who go back as far as you do, Jeff, your original training in the business. And could you talk a little bit about how that went down in Texas and how you got started and so forth?
Well, really kind of a funny story. I lived in Houston. Every Friday I used to go to Paul Bosch's office. I'd bug him and bug him and bug him, you know, and he kept telling me, "Oh, kid, you don't want to be a wrestler. You don't want to be a wrestler. You'll starve to death." And I went down there every Friday for a year. I walked in there one Friday afternoon. He said, "You're never going to give up, are you?" I said, "No, I'm not. He said, come in here." Sit down, he called Joe Blanchard down in San Antonio, and he said, "I'm sending a kid down to you. Take care of him." And so I proceeded to San Antonio and had my ass handed to me every day for a couple of weeks.
And who did your training?
It was through Southwest Championship Wrestling School. I was trained by Bruiser Bob Sweetan.
Can you tell us just a little bit about the details of what training was like with him?
Jonathan Boyd, sheep herder Jonathan Boyd, was the booker down there at the time. And what it consisted of mainly is I would get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I would do calisthenic from 8 to about 9, 9:15. And then I would get in the ring with Sweetan. He would beat the living hell out of me for about an hour. Then we would break for lunch. Then I would come back and do calisthenics for about an hour. And then Jonathan Boyd would get in the ring and tie me in a knot for about an hour. that went on for about 2 weeks. I come dragging in that third Monday. We danced. Damn, Kent, you still here?
Yeah.
It last.
Huh?
What happened?
We lost him.
Out there?
What's all that noise?
Hello?
Oh. You hear me?
Barely.
You're in a blizzard.
All that force. There he is.
I bet we have the most technical difficulties out of any show.
Yeah.
That's what makes it so fun.
No.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Now we can. So you're saying that half that went on for 2 weeks. How long before you actually got your first match?
School back then lasted about a month. You know, you trained every day. Worked around the loop for about 3 months. And, you know, broke in. I was like this guy, so I was very fun.
Hey.
Waited about 50 cars. And,
hey, Jeff. I'm going
to. With other guys.
Jeff, I'm going to ask you to call back in because this isn't we can't get you at all here. It's breaking up real bad.
I'll call you right back.
All right.
What was that?
Where's all that noise? Where's all that noise coming from?
That's Trent's phone.
Does it sound like like a tornado hitting? Because I'm like driving through a tornado.
Yes, it sounds like sounds like crap.
Oh, good. I want to sound like crap. I mean, if you're hearing like really hard rain, I'm just driving through like really hard rain is what I'm doing.
All right, let's
but
try
this
again.
But I don't let that stop me. I don't let a little thing like the rain stop me. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, that's much better.
There you go. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Trent.
Let me ask you real quick before Larry comes back. Would you say that Bruiser Bob Sweetan was the ugliest wrestler of all time?
No, I'd have to say I go Frank Morrell.
Damn. Go ahead, Larry.
So what year are we talking about here when you were getting your training at down in Southwest?
85.
Wow.
Florida. September, October of 85.
Where did you go from there?
I stayed in San Antonio until he sold out to Fred Behrens and became a Texas All-Star. I worked with him shortly for a little period of time. And from there, I went to Louisiana and got hooked up with Dallas from there. Are you there?
Yeah, and then sorry about these technical things. And then where'd you go from there?
I went to Dallas from there.
How was that?
Very clicky. Hard to get a spot.
And did you?
Yeah, I mean, I worked for a while there, you know, undercard. Of course, you know, you had Devon Erics on top and Chris Adams and Iceman and Jack Victory and John Tatum and all those guys, you know. So it was a scrape and a scrap to keep a spot, but, you know, I was young, green, and they were throwing me a bone now and then. Got the chance to work with Great Muta when he first, his first trip over when he was a Super Black Ninja.
Wow. And
yep, I put him over every night.
Was that a bad circuit as far as travel goes?
Not really, not by that time, because they wouldn't go on way out to Amarillo and all that trying to cover the Funk's territory anymore. You know, they were staying pretty much around and trying to get world-class rolling on a big-time level. And you know, it kind of played out for me from there. From there, I went out to California and worked for John Tolis and Victor Rivera.
Mm. When did you wind up in Smoky Mountain? I know you had spent some time over there.
Smoky Mountain? Well, I went back to Louisiana to work for Grizzly Smith for Five Star and for Buck Robley with NWF. And that's about the time I met Dominique. And, you know, we did a bunch of stuff, and Skandar Akbar helped me get her trained. And from there, you know, Buck shut down, so there wasn't really nothing but just god-awful indie stuff in Louisiana at that point. And me and a buddy of mine came up here and went to work for Jerry Jarrett. And I worked for Jarrett for a while, and from Jarrett, I hooked up with Tracy Smothers, who I'd worked for in Continental for a short period of time when I was there. And Tracy helped me get into Smoky Mountain. That was in, like, 91.
And I know there was a kind of an interesting story about what dealt with you when you got to Smoky Mountain. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Which story? The one with me and Chris Michaels, or the one with me and Kevin Sullivan?
I was thinking about the one with Sullivan, but I'd love to hear the Michaels one, too.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about the Chris Michaels thing, they were looking at him to do that Chris Comet gimmick. And me and him went to Morristown one night and did like a 8-minute high spot and just tore it up. And I ended up getting the job and he didn't. But the Kevin Sullivan deal, Sullivan and Adam Clark, Night Stalker, was doing that big deal with Brian Lee, you know, where they were carrying the tombstone around and saying they were going to bury Brian Lee and all that. And my very first TV for Smoky Mountain, I drew Sullivan. And, you know, we were talking in the back. He said, look, you know, we got this hot thing going on, and, you know, everybody's getting color for me. And I said, well, that's not a problem. I'll get color. So, he got to the spot in the match when I was supposed to get color, so he throws me outside and slams me into a table, and I get color and come up, and he says, oh, it's not good enough, kid, get it again. I said, all right. So he slammed me back in the table, and I got it again. He pulled me up, and he said, oh, it's still not good enough, get it one more time. I thought, man, I'm bleeding everywhere. So he slammed me back in the table, and I just stuck my hand up there, and I said, oh, yeah, it's pouring. About that time, man, it was like the lights went out. I got hit in the back of the head. And he had took a TV light stand and slammed the back of my head with it. I ended up splitting me open. I got 17 staples down the side of my head, 2 staples right in the center of the crown of my head. And to this day, it looks like I got a ball spot right in the center from the staples. But he didn't knock me out. And they hung me in a tree of woes, him and Clark, and was putting the boots to me till the baby faces come made the save. And referee, I'll never forget, was Mark Curtis. And Mark was saying, oh, my God, brother, you're bleeding everywhere. We got to get you to the back. This is horrible. So I didn't, you know, I ain't cut that bad, you know. I was careful. He said, no, it's not your forehead. He said, top of your head is split wide open. And I rolled over, you know, I'm selling, so I rolled over to get out of the ring. There was a puddle of blood bigger than my head laying on the mat, and I was like, holy crap. So I got to the back, you know, and I stuck my fingers and stuck them all the way into the scalp, and I was like, damn. And then Sullivan comes over, and he says, next time I tell you to get color, I want you to get color. And when he did, I just stuck my finger in his eye and tried to get his eye out, and Tracy and Tom Pritchard pulled me off of him. I was going to fight that bastard. But, you know, because back then, that's what you know, you couldn't let nobody get over like that on you. If you didn't stand up for yourself, everybody in the dressing room would run over you. That's the way the old-timers were. And, you know, I was trying to fight him. And we got back to TV about 2 weeks later. He was coming down the hall. I thought, boy, here we go. You know, and he says, hey. He said, how's your head? I said, it's good. He said, give me credit, kid. You're tough. He said, have you ever been to Japan? I said, no, not yet. He said, well, if you want to go, I'll hook you up. I said, well, hell yeah, I want to go. And that's the last I ever heard about that. So anyway, that's his way of saying sorry.
Huh. Wow.
But it was about Well, that very TV, when he told me that, was when they had when Inoki had sent the Japanese kids over, and he was going to do the, you know, that Asiatic spike deal, you know, that gold spike he had, and he filleted that Japanese kid's arm. It took like 40-something stitches in his tricep where Sullivan bladed him. It wasn't long after that Cornette got rid of him.
You mentioned that. I'm sorry.
Good for me. They turned me heel, and I either got to work the Rock and Roll Express or the Armstrongs every TV and every house show after that. So, well, I had it made. Bullet loved me. So,
I don't remember. How did you run end up there? What happened?
I brought Cornette the bill for them staples. Sandy Scott said, get that thing stitched up. He didn't bring me the bill. When they mailed me the bill, I brought it to him. Boy, he like come unglued. And about a month later, that kind of phased me out. I guess they figured they'd get me quick enough they wouldn't have to pay me. But it worked out good because I started doing TVs for WWF then.
Uh-huh. Wow. You know, I'm just reflecting on how few guys there are that are still actively working that had those kind of experiences that you had working all those different territories.
Yeah, there's only a handful of us left, and we're all getting old and broke down, man, I'm telling you.
Hey, you mentioned that you met Dominique down in Louisiana, you said, and that's where she got trained. I was curious, Dominique, to know about, like, how you got into wrestling. I mean, were you a wrestling fan by background before you got involved with Jeff, and how did that go?
You will not believe when I tell you that the very first time I went to the show, I did meet Jeff. I was going through a divorce, and Jeff was my knight in shining armor. He pulled me through that. He was a friend of mine from the get. We talked for a while. And that was the very first time I had ever went to the show, the very first time I met him. And one of my aunts was really good friends with Grizzly, and she went up there to see him, and I just rode up there with her. Was not a wrestling fan at all, did not like it, did not care for it, and went up there, met Jeff that night. The next time he came into town, about a month later, We exchanged phone numbers, talked to each other a little bit, and about a month later after that, he came over to my house. We chatted, and ever since then, I can't get rid of him. So we've been together 21 years.
She cooked for me, man.
Well, how long did it take before you actually got yourself involved in wrestling?
It wasn't very long. You know, back then it was really hard. Making money was a hard thing to do. Going together to a show, and of course we had kids too. It was easier for us to go and both of us work to make a pay than it was for just him. And at the time they needed girls. I mean, they had no girls. So I really didn't want to, but I thought for our kids and our family that's what we really needed to do. So I decided that I probably should go ahead and like it a little bit. So I did, and Jeff trained me like a guy. I was never trained like a girl. And training went on for, I guess, about a month and a half. He really, I mean, that was the only time he can get away with spousal abuse. So he beat me in the ground, just like he got me. And I wound up, you know, getting my matches, and, you know, we got double pay, my pay, his pay, and it wasn't until probably 2 years later that I started actually managing him and then wrestling on top of that. So I was double-dipping on what I was doing, and he was having his singles.
Well, that's interesting what you said about being trained like a man because, I mean, when you attack people at ringside, it's not like some valet. I mean, you're really kicking ass out there with people.
right. And, I mean, I was taught that way. I mean, this comes by my teaching and the way Jeff taught me how to be at the ring. I mean, I'm a female, so you know, for a long time, I weighed anywhere from 120 to 140. And he was like, well, you know, if they can't take it, then that's just too bad. But, you know, the thing is that I can take it back. You know, if they want to give it back to me, then that's fine. I love it. To this day, I love it. And I like giving it and I like taking it. So if they can't take it, then that's just too bad for them.
I'm just curious, were you from Louisiana originally?
Yes.
What part?
About 50 miles south of New Orleans. I spent a lot of my teenage years in New Orleans. I was a New Orleans girl.
Oh, my favorite city. I just was curious. Huh. So back to the two of you. When did you then arrive in Nashville, where you become such a fixture over the years?
Yeah, we came up in 91, and it was me and her and a guy named Jim Ryder, who worked as a Gang 2000 or a Chi-Town Brawler. He looked just like One Man Gang. Big guy. I've had him on Porter's TV a few times, you know, when he would come up and hang out for a while. But he mostly worked in Dallas. He stayed down there. For some reason or another, Jarrett and him didn't like him, so he didn't get a job, so Mike Davis was a good friend of ours. Mike put him to work for Global in Dallas. He did like a farmer gimmick with a little pig for a while, and then he did the Gang 2000 gimmick. But we came up here, and in all honesty, they had the deal going on with Lauren Davenport, and they were fixing to bring Miss Texas in. And I honestly think the reason I got the job for Jared is because they wanted Dominique and not me.
I got my tail beat those days, I want to tell you, by Miss Texas and Candy Devine at that time.
Wow. Hey, I'm going to see if I can get Hook Trent back in here so he can ask some questions. We had a rough time with his connection.
Is that what
Trent,
all the boys?
Is it any better now?
Yeah. Go for it. I'm going to pass the stick to you.
My connection, I was driving through a tornado. What do you want from me, man?
Are you safe?
Am I ever safe? I've always got heat. What are you talking about? You wanted to kill me for 10 years.
I said, are you safe?
I'm driving in the rain.
Okay.
You don't want to kill you, Trent. That's not work, man.
I know. Hey, Dominique, is this the first interview you've ever done?
Is it the what?
Is this the first interview you've ever done?
No.
I've never heard you do one before, so it's interesting to hear you talk.
No, this is actually probably my second one.
Okay. Interesting.
Either
hey,
two or
Jeff, go ahead.
I've done two or three.
Okay, cool. Hey, Jeff, I want to know, I'm going to jump around here a little bit, a couple things that Larry said I want to follow up on. I want your opinion on Buck Robley specifically, because the last couple of years, Robley has done several very interesting interviews and, you know, kind of put himself over as one of the greatest bookers of all time. And some people say that's true, and some people just say he's a crackpot. What's your take on Robley?
Buck Robley is one of the smartest wrestling minds at one time that I'd ever had the pleasure to work around. Buck had a lot of demons. And a lot of times that played, you know, a big part in what he was doing. But he had 80s, you know, late 70s and all through the 80s. You know, he was the Funk booker over in Amarillo. He was Joe Blanchard's booker. He booked Bill Watts for a while. You know, he booked Paul Bosch. He knew what he was doing, that's for sure. It's just which Buck you got, you know. And funny story, we were running a little indie show in Dominique's hometown in Houma, and we were drawing about 600 people running once a month. We draw about 600-700 people. The Buck started up that NWF, and seeing we were drawing, he'd come in and stole the building out. And I mean, he'd come in loaded. He had Rock and Roll Express, Eli the Eliminator, Axel, Butch Reed, Bob Orton Jr. I mean, it was packed from bottom to top talent. Those people were so spoon-fed on our storyline. that they were pissed. They wanted their money back. They didn't care who was there. They wanted us. Buck had to give us a job. So I went in with my guy I was working with at the time, Mark Young. Not Mark Young from Florida. This is another guy, Mark Young. But and we worked, well, actually it was Hoot, Robert Gibson, and Bob Holly was doing the new Rock and Roll Express. We worked them for Buck. Manny Fernandez was in there.
Of course, over the years in Nashville, you were very active in booking for a long time, and may still be for all I know. Did you get some of your booking stuff from Robley, or who influenced your booking style the most, would you say?
Bill Watts. You know, I grew
really?
Up watching South Wrestling, and, you know, I think, not that I'm such a great booker, so to speak, but instead of all the rehashed Tennessee stuff that they'd seen 500 times, I came in here and gave them something totally different that they hadn't saw. I gave them old Mid-South stuff. You know, I studied tapes and rerun angles that, you know, hadn't been done in 15, 20 years. You know, when Watts was doing million-dollar houses in Louisiana, and those people just, it was like candy, man. I mean, they just ate it as fast as you could give it to them. And for probably a good three and a half year run there, I mean, we were packing buildings. We kept the fairgrounds floating, you know, selling out Columbia, turning people away for a while. I mean, it was, we did really well. It, you know, it's like anything else. It's just old rehash stuff. You know, those old timers carry notebooks around, stuff that worked in this territory and stuff that worked in that territory, and you tweak and twist, and, you know, there's probably 100 good angles out there out of a million wrestlers, and it's just how you rehash them and make them work all over again. You know, the old saying that it's old, it's new again.
Well, I want to talk about one angle specifically that I don't think's ever been done anywhere else that I've seen, and Dominique, you were involved too. I'm talking about the angle you did where you showed a video of Dominique, Susan Morton, and I think Penelope when they were little girls on a playground. How did that come together? And, Dominique, what are your memories of that particular thing? I don't think that's been done anywhere else in wrestling, Jeff. What half the people don't know is Dominique and Susan Morton Penelope were all, as adults, in Porter's NWA main event promotion, and they went back and did an angle where these little girls were all friends as children and found children to play the roles of them as children on a playground. It was pretty amazing stuff that I've never seen done anywhere else, you know, portraying wrestlers when they were children.
It is something that was never done anything else. That's something we cooked up. You know, we were talking about how can we tie this story together? Why is there so much hate between these two? And we're sitting around brainstorming. We come up with this idea. So, you know, what if we could, you know, you start this interview off by saying, well, I'll tell you, it started a long time ago and do like a dream sequence back to little kids on a playground. Then we got thinking, well, hell, we got Jerry Lynn Morton, which is Susan's daughter, looks just like her. And Larry Valentine's two little girls, which were, you know, they were Desiree and Dominique. And then Penelope brought her little niece in to be her. And, you know, we rolled and laughed and shot that thing 50 times. And we shot it. We went down, we were shooting TV at Inferno Bar. We had to be there at 4 o'clock. We went at noon and shot from noon till time to get to the building to get all that stuff right. You know, I mean, we shot 3 hours of footage to get, you know, 2 3-minute segments out of it. But, you know, it was amazing. And those little girls today, you know, every time they see us, you know, it's like, I watched our video the other day. And, you know, I mean, those little girls are really proud. They're all grown up now. Hell, Jerry Lynn's working.
I really enjoyed that portion that we went through. The thing that I remember the most about that was the little girls that actually did the footage. They were so into our characters every single night when we worked that when we actually shot the video of them, they were in character, if that makes any sense. They knew what they needed to do as each girl. It was just amazing. I really enjoyed that. I don't think we'll ever do anything like that again, really, to go back in the past.
Yeah, I don't think that was as good as what we were doing back then.
Jeff, is that video available anywhere on the internet where it can be viewed? I'm really curious. You got me going on this one.
And Jeff, if I remember right, wasn't it shot in black and white, the playground thing?
Yeah, we shot it in black and white because it was supposed to be a memory. NWA Main Event Classics on YouTube. It's on there. I don't know exactly which episode. I can call Sean and find out. Sean's got all that stuff. He's supposed to be making me copies of everything. But the Main Event Classic stuff on YouTube at the NWA Main Event channel is it's got every bit of all of that stuff.
Okay. I'll check it out. Thanks.
Hey Jeff,
I'll tell you,
one more
book. All of that was the one where Susan and Dominique, they were fighting, and they came up through that bar and come out in that room. And Susan caught Dominique just before the door and slammed her into that jukebox. And we were in Coleman's, and we're doing post-production. And I said, man, it would be great if when she slammed her head into that, you could make it sound like, you know, the thing turns on. And
play
Jeff
song,
Grimes,
yeah.
And the master he was. And the funniest thing, it was that song Jukebox Junkie. When he slammed her head into it, you know, it started out as roll up, you know, like, and then, you know, when and we sit there and laugh so much about that. And another one of those that was really good was I was playing around in the editing bay one night with Picture in a Picture, and shaped the Picture in a Picture like a Jumbotron. We put that thing up, and all that was Picture in a Picture. And, I mean, we got a lot. I think you even alluded to it. They afford a Jumbotron, a Portatron 5000. You remember that?
Yeah, yes, I do.
All that was Picture in a Picture that I shaped like a big screen TV.
Well, if I could, hey, Larry, how many more questions do I get? I got several more before I pass
it
back.
Go for it.
How many do I get, Larry? Okay, going for it. Just one more booking question, Jeff, because over the years, you know, I found some of your booking to be really good and serious, and then you've done some kind of, you know, wacky out left field stuff, too. I mean, I guess my question is, what's your take on how believable should pro wrestling be, I guess is my question, as far as the booking angles go. Do you think it should be kind of wacky or more serious or kind of a combination of both?
Well, if it was left up to me, it'd be totally old school, but people don't buy it anymore. So you got to give some of the newer stuff, which I particularly don't care for, but you still got to be diversified. And then a lot of times when you say some of my wackier booking is probably a period of time where I was burnt out and really didn't give a shit.
And didn't have any talent to work with.
And yeah, a lot of it is lack of talent that can pull off stuff. I got a notebook full of stuff that if I had a crew, I could run everybody out of Nashville. But, you know, you got to have talent. If you don't have talent, see, that's what's good about Saul right now. Saul's got all the talent, you know, and they're reaping the benefits of it. I'm glad to be a part of that. And, first time in a long time, it's fun to go to work.
Well, now, of course, over the years, I've knocked a lot of Porter stuff, and I've liked a lot of it, too, and Bert stuff and your stuff. And both you and Larry, we've always critiqued your stuff. For you, both you and Dominique, guys like us, do you think that we're just idiots or have a point? Or pretty much, where do you stand on, as you would say, Jeff, the internet critics? And you too, Dominique.
Well, as far as what I think, you know, I try to use everything as a tool to learn, you know, because everything's got a learning curve to it. You know, number one, you guys are fans. You're going to tell me what you like or don't like stuff. I think at times you get off on a tangent where you, no matter what's going on, if you get rubbed the wrong way, then you're going to knock everything, but... Me as a booker am the same way. If I get rubbed the wrong way, I'm going to feed you shit till you're sick of watching it just to make you turn the TV off, you know. But I always try to be open-minded, you know, and I try to tell these guys will get so mad. You know, you'll say something on there, oh, that damn Trent, if I could see him, I'd choke him to death or I'd kill him. I was like, dude, don't you realize that he's got a message board to run, and if he don't have some controversy cooking on there, then what good is that board? And who's going to keep coming back to look? You know, I said, he's doing a job, just like you go in a ring and do a job. He's doing a job with that message board, and you guys got to understand that. Play along with it. Don't get mad. Jesus Christ.
It's the same way with me. I use it as a tool, and I think that, you know, if y'all are not talking about me, I'm not doing anything at all. So I feel like, if, I mean, whether there has been some bad things you said good things about, and there have been some good things that you said bad things about, there's some good things that I thought that was really good that you said bad things about, and then there was bad things you said really good that I thought was horrible. So, I mean, you know, if you're not talking about me, then, you know, nobody knows who I am. But if you're talking about me, whether bad or good, it's good for me if you're talking about me. So it's all good for me.
True. All publicity is good publicity.
I mean, that's how I feel. I know what I can and cannot do, so I try to make the best of it.
Cool. Hey, Jeff, how did you end up getting... So, go ahead, Jeff.
And what's your take on those answers?
Oh, I think it's cool. I've never really had any trouble with you because you're not a guy that's ever threatened or anything like that. So I think a couple times you've got your feathers ruffled, that stuff I've said, but I've never really had any major trouble with you. I have heard, not so much lately, I have heard like years ago, like you were knocking me pretty good in the locker rooms at one time years ago. But again, I'm the same way as Dominique. Hell, they're talking about me.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's times in there where, you know, I felt like that no matter what we did, you were going to knock it. You know, that's what I said earlier. There's times you get on your tangents just like I get on mine. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, never any animosity. It's just like, Jesus Christ, you know, screw him. He can't do nothing to make him
but
happy.
But, Trent, I think that what you don't understand is that in the locker room, yes, he was pissed about things, but he would also tell the guys that, you know, it doesn't matter what he says, you know. I mean, you just go out there and do the best you can, and then, you know, if he's going to talk bad about you, then you're not doing the best you can. I mean, he did tell him that, too. So there was a flip side of it that you never heard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just let me ask you, Jeff, just like about production values, because one thing about Saw is, like, Reno and them are really, really high on, you know, production values, where I've, and Porter over the years has not been so high on production values. Me, as long as I can see and hear an indie, generally speaking, I'm happy, but some people think you need all the, you know, the bells and whistles and, you know, the BS to kind of, but I don't know. I've never really felt it with indie. So what's your take on that?
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer in the old school. I think you almost give them everything they want, but not quite everything.
Mm.
And a lot of times, you know, Porter, at first when I was booking for him, the first 2 or 3 years, never questioned anything I did. Then after 2 or 3 years of listening to Bert tell him that he's got to be the man and he's got to be in control and he's got to get a thumb on me, and, you know, things started leaning a lot toward, well, Mike wanted this his way and there was no other way to do it, and I don't care what you want, I want it this way. And, you know, and it just, it brought my level of booking down, because if I'm going to be your booker, I want it 100%, because if I don't have it 100%, I'm not going to give you 100%. And
he wasn't,
you know,
happy, believe me. He brought it home, and he wasn't happy.
But, you know, I think Reno and them have got a top-notch product. You know, I mean, they take a lot of pride in what they're doing. Their editors are great. And, you know, I mean, there's a flaw now and then where somebody misses a hiccup in a thing. You know, there's been a couple of issues a few episodes back where there was some really crazy crap slipped through. But I think the biggest problem with Porter's was that once Jeff Grimes got sick and we had to start depending on other guys to do editing, that quality dropped off. And that was just simply, not that those guys aren't good editors, but, you know, Jeff Grimes had 40 years of experience. There was nothing that man couldn't do that I asked him to do. You know, I said, man, it would be great if we could do that. I can do that. And he would do it. And we wouldn't leave till it was perfect. There's times And I stayed at Coleman's till 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I can remember at one point Dominique telling me, why don't I just take my clothes and move up to that effing place because I don't ever come home.
Well, those guys that saw used to be about Porter Show. Might have been Porter's last run at the fairgrounds during that time. Their take on Porter's product was, you were there feuding with Boogie at the time, stuff like that, was, how can you guys watch that stuff? And they were talking about the production values. And I'm like, hell, if I can see it and hear it, it's wrestling, I'm happy. That was just my take on it. You know, they were like, geez, they didn't like the production of it. So I don't think they really watched it much, but, you know, they just thought it was bad production and dreary looking, I guess, you know.
A lot of the production was bad. Jeff Grimes wasn't doing it, and Jason James was trying to learn how, and Becker had just got out of school, and, you know, there was a billion kinks to work through right there. You know, none of them knew the program. Jeff Grimes, when he was well enough, would come in and teach him a little bit, you know, and about the system that they've got to do editing on. But a lot of it just not double-checking your work, you know. Too much grab-assing going on. Let's hurry up and get it done and get it ready, not double-checking stuff and go back. And there's, like, all kind of horrible shit there, you know. And their worst thing was we had to have the tape or the disc in on a Friday morning by 9, and at 3 o'clock in the morning on Friday morning, they were leaving the edit bay because they wait till the last minute to get in there.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, Jeff would work on that thing. We'd film on Saturday, and it wouldn't have to be on until the next Saturday, and he'd work on it for a week.
Yeah.
You know,
Jeff,
guys,
I'm pretty sure you were the World Tag Team Champions back in 2002 with Tim Ernesto, Disturbed Behavior, when NWA TNA first came on the scene. What's your take of when TNA first came to Nashville? I think it was good or bad for Nashville.
I think it hurt Nashville in the long run. I think it was good for Nashville. It was a good idea. But in trying to compete, they saturated the marketplace with freebies. Couldn't draw anything on a house show. And, you know, I mean, I don't have any animosity toward Jeff. You know, I mean, we get along, we talk, and I worked him on a show not long ago. But, you know, my deal was with Renesto. You know, they were looking at us. We were the world champions. And, you know, Jarrett wanted to watch us work. He said, well, look, I need to see you guys. And Bert says, well, I've got a show that he's going to be at, and you guys can work it, but I can't pay you. I was like, well, here we go, you know. So, let me weigh the options here. I can do one free night. Jarrett can look at me, and I get weekly pay-per-view. Okay, I'll do it. Renesto threw a fit. There's no way I'm not working without getting paid, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, come on, Tim. You know, this is going to be big money in the long run. Do you want to make $100 a night or do you want to make $500 a night? Well, I ain't working for nothing. He'll think I'm an idiot if I do, and blah, 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 blah. And he refused to do the show. So Barrett bitched, raised hell, called Bill Behrens, and like 2 weeks later, Bill Behrens said, sorry to do it to you, but you guys got to go to Tampa and drop the belts. So we had to off Tampa and drop the belts back to the Heavenly Bodies, who dropped them to, the Johnsons. Is that what they called them?
Shane Twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they dropped him to them, and they went in and took the spot. James Storm and Chris Harris got our spot.
Hmm.
What America's Most Wanted got was supposed to be Disturbing Behaviors.
Is that right? I didn't know that. Of course, those guys were a lot younger. You think they were looking for younger guys, or you think they would have took a chance on some older veteran kind of guys at the time?
No, I mean, I had the opportunity. I don't know so much if, you know, what the situation was with Timmy. All I know is what my end of it was. And I pretty much had a shoe in. Bob Ryder assured me a spot. And all that went down, and I think Jarrett got a bad taste in his mouth. And, you know, next thing I know, Storm and Harris had that America's Most Wanted spot. And, you know, I said, well, we'll work you in. But I just didn't pursue it at that time. I was hard-headed, too.
Well, I'm going to pass it back, Larry, although I got some more, but I don't want to hog the whole show. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about your training of Tommy Mercer.
Yes.
Yep. What do you need to know?
How did Tommy Mercer come into your life?
That is a story in itself. I was about to the point where I was fed up again, about ready to call it quits, and to the point where I had Steve-O running my training school. You know, I mean, I was to the point where I just didn't give a rat's ass. And Steve-O ran into a little bad luck and was out of pocket for a short period of time there, which we won't allude on. But, you know, all of a sudden it's like, well, look, you know, you got this guy's coming up here to train. He's already paid his down payment. And, you know, got to have somebody to work out with him. I said, all right, Porter, I'll come up here and work out with him. So I was running late, so I sent my kid, Jamie Ferrari, up there. I said, Jamie, and Jamie called me and said, well, he's here, Dad. You know, well, what do you want me to do? I said, well, you know, make him do 100 push-ups and 100 sit-ups and, you know, stretch. He said, okay. So I was probably 20 minutes from the building. About halfway there, Jamie called me back, and he says, okay, he's got those done. What do you want him to do now? I said, what? He's got all that done? He said, yeah. So what's he doing? He's stretching, wanting to know what's next. I said, well, damn, hell with him. Tell him to do 100 Hindu squats. His legs be wore out by the time I get there. He'd be ready to go home, you know. So I'm like 5 minutes from the building. Jamie calls me back. He says, what's next? I said, he did 100 Hindu squats already? He said, I actually did 150. I'm like, I'll be there in a minute. I walked in the court, and there stands Mercer, and I was like, holy shit. You know, and I said, all right, well, let's get in here and see what you can do, you know. So I got in there and went over a couple of things with him, had him bump around. And, you know, I mean, first time you show him, he was like a sponge. I mean, it's just like, geez, does he not do anything wrong? I thought, you know, I test his ass. So I taught him how to lock up. I snatched a headlock. I said, well, look, this is what we're going to do. I ran a spot with Jamie. I said, I want you to do this spot. And, I mean, he hit it on the nail. I thought to myself right there, this kid's a natural. There's no way I'm letting him get away. And about halfway through his training, I quit charging him, man. I said, you know, just keep your money, kid. You know, you're going to make it this business. And, you know, to me, this ain't about the money. You know, all I ask is that when you do make it, which you will, that you keep my name alive out there. And, you know, to this day, you know, he preaches the gospel about me. He believes in me. Just Chad Williams. I don't know if you guys know that kid, Chad Williams. He worked a couple of TVs for Saw.
Yeah, I've seen
him. Yeah.
Randy Orton knockoff kind of looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's got a dark match tonight at TNA in Orlando. And as a matter of fact, Mercer called me. He said, please. He said, I need you. I said, what do you need? He said, well, you know, Chad's got this dark match. We didn't think all this was going to happen so fast. And, you know, he needs to work on facials, and he needs to work on selling, and he needs to work on transitioning from spot to spot. And, you know, we jumped up there Friday night, went to the new HWA place and crawled in the ring and worked for about 2 hours on stuff. And, you know, I mean, it's just, I told Mercer, I said, well, damn, you know what you want him to do. I said, you don't need me. And he's still, well, yes, I do. You know, I need you, blah, blah, blah. You know, so, you know, just couldn't ask for a better guy. Great attitude, you know, humble, keeps his head about him. And, you know, I still say that kid, he'll main event WrestleMania someday. You mark my word, he will main event WrestleMania before it's over.
I really like the storyline that involving you and him for the NWA main event TV, I guess that would have been last summer or so when Bill Behrens was up there doing the TV. Did you lay out that story?
Yeah, that was me and Mercer. We did that whole storyline. Bill handled all his guys, and I handled the Nashville boys. And that was me and Mercer's deal.
Well, congratulations. That was really nice. That was a heck of a story, and so well told all the way through, I thought. Very, very intriguing and interesting twists and turns, and, you know, really nice stuff.
What was the story with the... Go ahead, Jeff.
Bird almost ruined that storyline. He jumped the gun and turned him heel And I told him, I said, man, don't do it, Bert. I've got this storyline cooking that is going to turn him into a monster heel. If you turn him now, there's no reason. I said, you know, what's the reason for turning him? He woke up and had a bad day? I mean, Jesus, come on. And they bound and determined they were going to do it, and they turned him. I said, if you turn him and it don't work, I said, you're going to get heat for the turn. I said, but in the long run, if he don't sustain that heat, you have just lost that kid a year's worth of fucking work. And they turned him, and he flopped.
Mm.
And we took and wrote that storyline out and turned that whole thing around and got him over as a monster heel. And, I mean, he's been over like Rover since.
Hey, what was the deal with the there's coming thing? Well, what was the deal with the he's coming thing that Jason James was doing? I heard, like, you kind of went in business yourself and kind of said it was Mercer when it wasn't Mercer. What was the story with that?
It was going to be Mercer. And
really?
Well, actually, it was nothing. It was Jason trying to fill time.
Yeah.
You know, rocked on and it caught on. And I said, well, Mercer's about ready to debut. I said, well, let's build this thing up to Mercer, you know, because we're going to bring him in as this big baby face. I'm a firm believer. You got to start as a baby face because you got to learn to get over as a baby face before you know how to be a heel and get a baby face over. So, and that's why he came in as a baby face. He's a natural heel. From day one, I knew he would be a heel, but he had to have that learning curve of being a baby face. And we had the big falling out, you know, where Jason and him went behind my back and tried to steal the book out from under me. And I just followed out to old Porter. I said, you know what, y'all shove the book up your ass. I'll go somewhere else. And I walked away, and Mercer said, well, the hell with him. He said, I'm with you. And, you know, we went to work at Tony's, and that's what the whole thing was about, you know, when he debuted over there and the he's coming deal. I said, yeah, he's coming. He just didn't go where you thought he was, but you're not going to get away from me.
Now, I know you and Larry, real quick?
Go ahead.
I know you and Mercer both got kind of mad at me at the internet, thought I was knocking Mercer and stuff like that, but your comment about you're predicting he was going to, you know, main event WrestleMania, you know, my whole position is that he may be someday, but I just thought he was being kind of pushed too far, too fast. I understood why, and hell, he's on TNA now, but I just thought it was just like, man, this guy, he just needs time, and it just what was the big rush, I guess, was my thing, and I guess that's why you guys are mad at me. What's your take on that?
It wasn't a rush. He was ready.
Yeah.
He was ready, Trent.
He already had a deal with WWE. You know, he dropped a WWE deal to go to TNA.
Yeah, he had a Florida deal? Well, I didn't know about that. What was that?
Yeah, no, he had a deal with them, and, you know, they kept bringing him up and not doing nothing with him and giving him dark matches and dangling him on a string. And, you know, so I called downtown Bruno, who's a good friend of mine that I've known for 25 years. And I said, hey, look, you know, what's the deal with Johnny Ace up there? Are they gonna put him to work? Are they going to get him developmental? Because he was supposed to be going to Florida.
Right.
And, you know, they were dragging him around and dragging him around and dangling the carrot. And meanwhile, we did a show up in Princeton with Jeff Jarrett. And I introduced him to Jeff, and Jeff watched him for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, a month on TV, and he called me and he said, look, you know, I'm interested in this guy. We'll call him and talk to him. And he called Mercer, and Mercer called me. He said, oh, my God, they want me in Orlando Monday, but you know what, I got to deal with WWE, and I don't want to screw that up, and, you know, what should I do? I said, well, call Johnny Ace and tell him. Say, look, TNA wants to look at me. You guys going to freaking sign me, or should I go? Because I don't want to burn that bridge if you're not going to do anything with me. And Johnny Ace wouldn't call him back. And I called Bruno. Bruno said, if Johnny won't call him back, tell him to go. And he went down there, and, you know, they fell in love with him, and D'Lo jumped all over him. And then TNA did the same thing, you know. They were like, we want you to go to work, and we're going to get you a contract, and we're going to get you set up. And they rocked it on for about a month, and D'Lo finally told him, he said, look, if you don't sign him today, I'm going to call Johnny Ace myself and tell him to put him to work. So they signed him. But they were going to put him under developmental, and he went down there, and Bischoff fell in love with him. And he said, no, you signed him to a contract. I don't want him on developmental because I'm writing him straight into TV. And then they had the deal where Sting come back and Hogan come back, and it was eating up all the TV time, so it knocked him off TV for a week or two. But, you know, he, as a matter of fact, tonight he starts his first serious angle. He's on all the house shows now, and he's going into that big program with Abyss.
Nice.
Oh.
Nice. Just, hey, a couple more things before we let you go. I got to ask you about your promo style. I consider it to be very unique, but I'm just curious, who were your influences? I just think you're so awesome at it. Go ahead.
The devil.
Besides the devil, anyone else?
Actually, if you go back and look at old Bill Watts tapes of Jake the Snake Roberts when he was young.
All right.
And Ernie Ladd. My interviews are a cross between Jake the Snake Roberts and Ernie Ladd. Hell, all my catchphrases are old Ernie Ladd. Hey, you know, you get on that phone and call somebody. If I said it once recently, I said it 100 times. Talking to Reese Bowden, you know. Get on that phone and call somebody. I'd rather go to my mama's funeral than my own. That's all Ernie Ladd. Hurt. He'd point that finger, you know, a big old long finger would curve halfway around the other direction. But, you know, just before Ernie died, I did a couple of shows down there and cut some promos, and he was telling me, he said, it sounds so good. He said, I can't believe it. Verbatim, you know all my catchphrases. I said, hell, I grew up listening to you, Ernie. I thought you was the scariest sumbitch there was.
I get it from what you said earlier. You're happy with the way things are going in SAW. Anything else you want to say about your status there?
No, everything's going smooth. You know, it's fun. It's a good locker room. Everybody's having a good time. And, you know, there's no animosity and no cancer in the dressing room. You know, everybody's happy. And, you know, and that's all Reno's want. He says, you know, as long as we can come out here and have a good time. We were in the dressing room the other night. I said, God, guys, I don't even want to work anymore. I just want to come hang out in the dressing room and tell stories and crap, you know. It's more fun in the dressing room than it is in the ring now. It's crazy because it hadn't been that way in, hell, 8 years.
Hey, Jeff, I did want to ask the program you did with Hammerjack, because Larry had mentioned – you know, the angle there where Hammerjack was a killer of a motorcycle club in Texas and stuff like that. Do you think that was a good angle? Because I don't, like, fans that have watched Nashville so long, there's no way they could really buy that unless it was directed at the syndication audience. So it was kind of strange.
Well, there's a few tweaks that could have made it a little more believable that we never had a chance to get to. As far as the biker angle, you know, I'm not a biker, you know, and, you know, Hammerjack's not a biker. I mean, we kind of got to look like 80s bikers, but, you know, it was the storyline, and, you know, we made chicken salad out of chicken shit, I guess you could say. But I wouldn't, you know, I pitched two or three other ways to do it, but they were bound to turn the way they wanted, so that's what we did with it, you know, and I mean, the brotherhood gimmick still continues on. I mean, back in the 80s, when hanging around in Houston, I had a cousin of mine that rode with the Bandidos, so I hung out with those guys a lot. So, you know, I could call a favor or two and get, you know, a dozen bikes to show up at a show and hang out with me if I needed to. You know, we actually thought about doing it. And this whole deal coming in, you know, my big bulldozer coming in.
Yes.
I don't know if I'd have tipped that. I'll let y'all wait on that one. But it's
all right.
I hope it'll be good. This is mainly to just kind of help polish this guy and kind of bring him along. Great guy. Love him to death. You'll know exactly who he is as soon as you see him. He should debut Friday night, I believe.
All right.
But, you know, don't know how much longer that angle will go on, if we can turn it into something else. But, you know, as long as there's a twinge there, I guess, you know, I'll roll with it. But if I would have wrote the angle, I'd have wrote it a little different. I'd have wrote it maybe that, you know, there was something in our past, but it wouldn't have been that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I myself didn't think it would be believable, but we're not selling it to a Nashville crowd. You see
yeah.
what I'm saying?
That's the way
you
I
know?
Took it, is you couldn't sell it to a Nashville crowd.
Right. It's, you know, for where it's going, yeah, it's believable. But for Nashville, no, it's not. Absolutely not. Nashville wouldn't buy it one time. But the bottom line with Saul is we're not trying to make them 200 people happy. We're
yeah.
trying to make those people on America One and overseas happy while we're peddling those tapes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's working because I've already got calls from Germany and from England wanting to know about bookings.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's working out pretty well. So hopefully sometime before summer's out, we'll go to England. And then in the fall, when they have the catch tournament again, I've been invited to come over to the catch tournament.
Oh, wow.
I'd yeah, I'll have to pop up and get my fat ass back in shape for that.
Hey, Dominique, your thoughts on Saul?
I love Saul. I will absolutely do anything for Reno and Paul. I never thought I would say that, honestly. But I really do like it. It's warming. It's fun again. I've had a hard time having fun, but I like it. I basically would do anything for them, really. I mean, anything they call, I would do. I like it there.
Well, cool. And thanks to both of you for giving us your time tonight to do this interview. Really appreciate it. It's been fun.
Thank you, Larry. We appreciate you having us on.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, of course, you can catch them on America One every Friday night at 10 o'clock, every Sunday at 3 p.m. And I think we have our next guest on the line. Yes, we do. The former Jack of All Trades with Great Championship Wrestling, who will also fill us in his current escapades in pro wrestling, Mr. Taylor McKnight is joining, phoning it in. Welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you, Larry. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
We're on with Murder One, I believe, is still new.
All right. Murder, are you there?
We lost him.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
You lost him.
Murder, you got to pay your phone bill, bro. Seriously.
Anyway, hopefully he'll call back in.
Yes.
There he is.
Murder.
There's Murder
yeah.
One.
Oh,
hi,
shit. It's about to hit the fan now.
Yeah, let me go. Oh, let's do it.
What's going on, man?
Oh, nothing. Just celebrating like a champion.
That's right. Brand new NWA Tag Team Champions. Nice little plug there for you. Murder One and AJ Steele, the usual suspects. My favorite tag team.
Hey, I just want to ask real quick, is there a wellness policy in the NWA? Because if so, this could be trouble, Murder.
No, I think AJ's clean.
Okay, cool. Cool.
I can pee clean.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Go ahead.
You trust me on that. I can pee clean.
Hey, there was a wellness policy in GCW. I mean, every week, Murder One would come in. I'd look at him in his bloodshot eyes, and I'd say, Murder, are you clean? And he'd say, who the fuck are you? And I'd be like, yep, he's fine.
Awesome.
Well, it's been, let's see, 5, going on 6 months since Great Championship Wrestling shut down. You know, at one time when it was Georgia Championship Wrestling, and early in its Great Championship Wrestling run, it was maybe the best promotion in Georgia at one point. And
yeah,
there's a lot of stories that have come out of there through the years. A lot of stories, and I know you and Murder know a lot of the stories. So,
Me and Murder are involved in a lot of the stories.
Murder, where do you want to kick this off?
I don't know where to start, man. I mean.
I don't want to sound like an idiot laughing, but man, that's exactly what I would have said if you had asked me. I don't know where to start.
It was an experience. I mean,
yeah, it was a roller coaster without an ending.
But you know what? I kind of miss it. because it was like that. It was that dose of craziness in my life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree.
You didn't know what to expect. You had to be on your toes.
It was always something.
I miss it too because the best stories I ever got came out of Columbus. For sure, without a doubt, those were the best, the most interesting, crazy stories always came out of Columbus. And now that's all gone. So, when you first came in there, were you just as a ring announcer?
When I was first hired?
Yeah.
Okay, I was brought in, a little unknown fact, I was actually, I think it was like November 2007, I had been working with Shikara in Philadelphia for about maybe a year at that point, and I had been talking to Quackenbush about going up to Philadelphia full-time, and I had a deal on the table, which was nice, and if I sound out of breath, I apologize, I just got out of the hospital for bronchitis, so I'm not doing anything weird if I'm out of breath, I'm just sucking wind, but so I had a deal in November 07 to go to Shikara, full-time, paid, place to stay, and I had applied at GCW like three times. I'd sent them tapes, I'd sent them, you know, like letters. They didn't seem interested, and I was okay with that. Well, finally, I just made my decision. I'm like, okay, I'm going to Philadelphia, so cool. That's when they called me. I think it was Quentin Michaels might have called me, been the first one to call me. And he was like, yeah, we really want you to come to GCW and try out. And I said something to them that I don't think they were used to hearing. And I said, no, I'm not interested. I'm sorry. I you probably have a great promotion, but I've never really seen much of your shows. And I'm moving away, so I'm not interested. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, then they call me back again, and they're like, look, we really want you to come and really want you to do. I'm like, okay, I'll come do a tryout. Well, my ride fell through for that week. And then I took it as a sign. I was like, okay, I can't get up there for the show. It was the first ever God Bless Fort Benning show. And I was like, I can't make it. I'm like, okay, this is a sign. So I called them. I couldn't get through to Quentin Michaels, and I didn't know who Diane Hughes was at that point. So he was my only contact. So I called Great News, which was their office number at the time, and I left a message with their receptionist, and I was like, yeah, look, I can't make it to the tryout. This is like 4 or 5 days in advance. I'm like, I can't make the tryout. Thank you, I appreciate it, but just let them know I won't be coming. I can't make it. Well, then, like, I guess the show went off, and a couple of my friends that used to work up at GCW, they come back after that show, and they're like, yeah, to let you know, you got major heat with GCW. And I'm like, why? And they're like, well, you no-showed. I'm like, I didn't no-show. So long story short, it turns out that the guy that I called, he just never gave them the message. And finally, Quentin Michaels gets a hold of me a third time. He's like, look, let's just throw this one away. Let's just give it a shot. So December 1st, never forget it, December 1st, 2007, I was already mentally, I was already checked out. My head was pretty much shaved. I didn't really have my good suit. I was just going because I was like, all right, I'll do the right thing. So I go, and we hit it off. Everybody hits it off real well. I had a good little experience there. And they offered me a job. No, I was just hired as an announcer. But within, I would say, 3 months, I was probably doing more, some of which I volunteered for. So, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was production work. It was a lot of different things. I really enjoyed it, but at first I was just an announcer, and it kind of progressed into where I think it was around 09, late 2008, I started throwing ideas out. I took over the website, which was a nightmare. I took over a bunch of different things, but I think by 09 I was unofficially writing some of the ideas. I wasn't booking the show, but I was coming up with some ideas. And then when I had quit and I came back in 2010, that was when I started actually officially booking.
But I want to ask you about obviously several personalities, but we have a caller on
sure.
the line here. Area code 931, you're on Phoning It In with Taylor McKnight.
Cool. How you doing, bud?
Area code 931.
Hey.
You're on phone.
Hello.
Do you have a question?
You're on.
Do you have a question for Taylor McKnight?
for a compliment? I'll take those.
Nope, he hung up.
It's a story of my life, Larry.
Can I ask you your take on Quentin Michaels?
I got to catch my breath. I just heard Murder laughing.
Yes. Somebody's
okay.
Chuckling.
Let's see. I would say... Oh, hey, do you know what that area code was? What was that area code again?
931.
Anyone know where that's from?
Well, anyway, are you in the weed location program or something?
That's it. That's what it is. I work with the government now. It's great. I just got Bin Laden. You're welcome. So anyways, Quentin Michaels. All right.
Yes, Quentin
Michaels. I heard all sorts of bad stories before I first met him. I was warned by several of the boys and by just other people that had worked with him. They warned me quite a bit. I'll be honest, I call a spade a spade. And he, to me, was never, directly to me, he was never any of the things that people said. Now, I saw some of those things. But he was always nice to me. But I did see, like, how he dealt with certain talent, and I saw how he would... You know, I mean, I'm not saying this in a derogatory sense. I'm just saying it as pretty much every booker, I think, does, that he would manipulate certain scenarios and situations to get what he wanted to get accomplished. And I didn't necessarily agree with it. But as far as, like, how he treated me, I had very limited conversations with him. I just saw him at the studio on, I think it was Tuesdays. We did the TV, and then Thursdays at the shows. But as it went on, we got to talk quite a bit, but I always saw that side of him. It was just never directed at me.
Okay, at the end of his run there was a story that came out that he and John Bogey were suspended because some sort of a fight they had.
I did hear that.
And
yep.
Shortly thereafter, he departed from the area.
That would have been April 22nd, if I'm not mistaken, 2009.
Well, what was this? What can you tell us about that situation and his departure from GCW?
All I remember is, we were all in the office after the show, and everyone was actually in a fairly decent mood, and I just was ready to go home. And I remember Quentin was talking about something. And he was hot at Bogey about something, or Bogey was hot. I couldn't remember which one was which. Somebody was hot at somebody, but it didn't seem like a big deal. It just seemed like, okay, you know, anyone that's worked with John Bogey, and he'll tell you, he'll be the first one to tell you, he can be a real pain in the ass. But, I mean, you know, not necessarily always on purpose. But and it was one of those things, like, okay, well, Bogey pissed off Quentin for the 18,000th time, whatever. Well, Quentin walked outside the room, and then he came back in like a minute later, and he said he had, he was pretty composed, but he was like, well, he's like, I just got into a fight with Bogey, and I'm leaving. So I don't know if it actually happened. I never saw it. But I do remember, and Murder will remember this. The next night, which was a Friday, was, I believe I went up to FCW. Not the Florida one, but, you know, the one that used to run up here in Georgia. And I remember I saw Murder, and I remember that was everybody was just talking about it, that Quentin had gotten knocked the hell out, so to speak. And I don't think anybody was really sad about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I heard he got drugged by Bogey. I couldn't believe it.
I actually remember, the only thing I really remember about the reactions, and this is straight shoot, I remember exactly what Murder One said. I said, Murder, I said, Bogey hit Quentin. Murder laughs, goes, man, he just moved up in my book.
And, you know, there were a number of stories about his being ill with diabetes, if I'm not mistaken.
Quentin. Yeah, that's what I believe. That's what I was told.
And that his departure had to do with his illness, or that at least after he left, that's why he wasn't coming back, because he was so ill.
That I would know, because the day that the whole thing with him and Bogey went on, I think the only time I'd seen him, he came up once in September, right before I had quit. He came up to visit, but it was my second case of bronchitis back then, so I was down for the count. I never even saw him. I just know that he was here, but I never had a conversation with Quentin after that day, so I don't know if he really. I heard that he was sick. So I'm sorry if he is, but no, I never spoke to him after that.
Well, I'd like to just jump over to talk about the trials and tribulations of your tenure as the booker GCW, and what, how did you wind up becoming the booker, and then what kind of challenges did you run into once that took place?
Okay. Well, in 2009, I believe it was October 1st, I did my what I thought would be my last show with GCW. I was very unhappy with the things that were going on. And I'll tell you, and it may get me in trouble, I don't care. This is what led to my departure that I've never told anybody. It was in the office. J-Rod had wanted a video. He had asked me for some footage, which was, standard. Everyone does. And there was no problem. Diane had asked me to not give J-Rod the video. She was gonna give it to J-Rod, to my understanding, but she wanted to see the video that I was giving him first. And it's her footage, so I said, okay, no, it's no problem. I said, but J-Rod's going to be here in a few minutes, so what do I tell him? Or do you just want to see the video now and clear it? And she said, no. She's like, just tell him that, you can't find it. She's like, I'll look at it, and you can give it to him. If I say it's okay, you can give it to him by the end of the night. I said, okay, that's fine. So J-Rod came in, and he's very cool. He's like, hey, man, do you have that video? And I said, yep. I said, I have it. I said, I don't know where it is right now, going along with what I was told to say. And Diane was sitting there, and I look over to Diane to back me up, and Diane crosses her arms, starts shaking her head. She goes, hey, dude, you would lose your head if it wasn't attached to your shoulders, and starts talking about how unorganized and how unreliable I am. So, and then, of course, J-Rod's hot, and I don't blame J-Rod, because here's J-Rod, coming into this company, and I was told, telling him he doesn't have a video, and now the owner, it was a whole big mess. So I remember I went to J-Rod, right after that, and I was like, look, here's what happened, yada, 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 I'm done. I said, tonight, I'm done. I said, I'm sorry about your footage. I said, I do have it, and I said, it's in the office. Whether he ever got it, I don't know, but that was what led to me leaving, because I was like, okay, I was just set up to look like an asshole when, I didn't deserve it. And there's plenty of time.
I was going to say, was that the first time that Diane threw you under the bus?
Probably not, but that's the first time it was ever significant. I'll take that back. No, I would probably venture to say that was the first time, because that really bothered me that, here I'd been doing my job, and I don't mind. I'll play ball if you're asking me. It within reason. Like I say, all she was asking was a few hours to watch the video that is her footage. Okay, fine. I went along with it, and I got hung because of it. So I was like, okay. From that point on, and to this day, I will never trust a promoter over the boys, because you know what? Yeah, the boys can. Don't get me wrong. There are certain boys in the industry that will stab you in the back just as quick as a promoter. But there's more honor in being stabbed by your friends than being stabbed by your enemies. So, especially when you don't realize who your enemies are. So, almost every situation I've ever had with a wrestler or a talent, period, where we haven't seen eye to eye or whatever, they stab you in the front. It's there's a code, and I got to say that nobody in that GCW locker room, past or before I was Booker or after, to my knowledge, nobody ever stabbed me in the back. Now, there was people that I had a conflict with, but I will say nothing bad about, I know a lot of people think or presume that there's heat between me and certain wrestlers. The truth is that I have nothing but respect for every one of those wrestlers. And if any of those wrestlers have ever said anything bad about me, they probably had a reason, because I was put in a really, really shitty predicament. And there was actually one wrestler, I'm not going to say who it is, but there's one top-tier GCW wrestler, and Murder, I won't say who it is, but Murder will know who I'm talking about, that me and him had a real, real loud argument in the parking lot. And Murder got between the two of us. And that wrestler was cool enough, when I left GCW, that wrestler was cool enough to send me a personal message and let me know that he forgave me for everything, and that he sympathized with my situation. You know, and to me that was just such a class act. And that's how
yeah.
I can describe every wrestler in GCW in the locker room. Was a class act, and it was a pleasure to work there. But anyways, I'm sorry, I'm rambling.
So you left GCW at that point, but then you later returned. I guess you went. Is that when you went to? You were at RPW for a period of time.
I worked at RPW. Yeah, and I loved it. Oh, RPW was. I can't say enough good things about them. They were, and I'm not kissing ass because I'm not working there. But I mean, they really had their stuff together, and it was really great because, you know, in GCW, especially in 2009. In 08, really, with the leadership being so wishy-washy, depending on who was booking, and the fact, it wasn't even a matter of who was booking, it was a matter of, you knew whoever was booking would last about 3 months, and then there'd be somebody else. So a lot of the talent was very, I think it was just a down vibe. But I remember when I went to Rampage, a lot of the same wrestlers were there, and it was so much fun. Everybody was just having a great time, and I imagine it's still like that. I never had a bad show at Rampage. Everybody was very, very cool with me. And I remember when I was at Rampage and I was told, I went home for Christmas and I got the offer for the book at GCW. I remember thinking, like, I really want to create, not the product, because I don't believe in, you know, Rampage is a great promotion, but you don't need two of them. You need to do something different. But I wanted to emulate the feeling in the locker room, because the locker room was a really great vibe. And also, one thing I want to point out about being the booker, I'm 29 years old. At the time, I was 27 when I was offered the book. I've been in the business now 10 years. I think it was eight years when I was offered the book. That does not qualify me to be a booker. And I never once ever claimed to be the best person for the job. I remember I talked to Murder quite often about it before I took the job, that I didn't think I not that I couldn't do it, but it was a matter of, I knew there was guys in that locker room that could do it better. But my theory was, if I take this job, I can take the heat off them. I can be the asshole to her. They can do their thing. The money will go up and everything will be great. Because the number one problem GCW ever had was the ownership conflicting with the booking. And I don't mean, I don't like this because it's raunchy, or I don't like this because it's wrong, or I don't like, no, it was a matter of, I don't like this because I know it's going to be a bitch for you to fix. And I remember, you know, forget my trials. I'll tell you, there was a couple of the wrestlers that were booking. I think Murder might know a couple of them. And they would come up with decent ideas, and it would continually be a struggle to get these ideas out, you know, and it was a pain. So when I took the book, I remember I talked to Murder. I think I booked the whole first show with talking to Murder. And it was great. The first few months, I'd say the first 2 months were really, really good. We had a great program with Murder and Bull Buchanan, which was which turned out to be a really great program. It was actually a substitute, because my original program had been, my original main event program had been Kyle Matthews and Jimmy Rave. And Jimmy had suffered a injury at the time, and he was unable to perform. And he was very, and again, contrary to what anybody has ever read, because I've read all sorts of stuff, and I read quite a bit of it when it happened. Jimmy was very professional. Jimmy offered to come in and do a thing to drop the belt and everything, and he was just in a lot of pain at the time. And I said, no, that's fine. But anybody that ever, you know, if anyone out of that office or anybody ever says anything about, you know, well, Rave didn't want to work there, Rave did business the right way. He really did. And there was no conflict there whatsoever. You know, and I thank him for that. He, you know, I talked to him about what I should do, and he gave me some advice. It was, you know, he's great. So he's another guy that I think didn't get a fair shake there. But anyway, so Kyle Matthews, I was really, really proud to make Kyle Matthews champion. I'm sure he's been champion many places, but I was really proud of that because I've always thought Kyle. I was there when Kyle first started. His first match at GCW, anyway, was February 12th, 2009. I remember that. And he was one of those guys, like, consistently every night would perform, and every night he would pull out something good. It didn't matter what you gave him. He could make it work. So I did my first show was the Phoenix City Rumble. I remember I ripped that off. and Kyle went over, and then we did this whole angle with Murder and Diane because Diane wanted to be involved, and Murder sold that. She cut this promo, and I don't remember much about the promo. I just remember the reaction. Murder One sold it like $1 million. It was great. But I would say the first 2 months were fun. I mean, Murder, what do you think? I think the first two when it
is that when I choked her?
No, that was the month before I got there. But remember, we did the thing where she showed up on the big screen and she said you were going to have to wrestle Bull Buchanan in the Six Corners of Torture.
Oh yeah. That was good stuff, man.
Yeah, and you sold it. Like, she was on the screen and she's like, "You're wrestling Bull Buchanan," and Murder's just like in the ring shrugging, like, "Yeah, who cares." And she's like, "It's going to be a Six Corners of Torture match." And Murder sold it like she had a gun to his head. I mean, oh, my God. He was just like, "What the hell is that, man? What the hell is that?" It was great.
Well, we've mentioned the name Diane several times. And for those who may not be familiar with GCW, we're talking about the owner of GCW at that point, Diane Hughes. What would you – could you give an example or one of the worst examples that you could think of as far as like, well, you heard where you had a booking way you wanted to go and it just got thwarted by ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. I can name three, but they're short. First, I will say this, that, and Murder will attest to this, she has a good side. I don't know what or why she does things the way she does. She was always very nice to me. I will say the good before I say the bad. She was always, until the end, anyways, she was very, very trustworthy as far as her actions towards me. When I had to go to the hospital, she took me. When I needed glasses, she bought them. So I will not sit here and say that I wasn't taken care of, because I was. But speaking from a business sense, there were some problems because, for example, we booked Tommy Dreamer versus Johnny Swinger for, I believe it was June 12th. It was the Extreme Measures show. And it was, you know, it was booked basically that Dreamer goes over. I mean, because Swinger was in the middle of a really big push. He could afford a loss. It wasn't going to hurt him, you know. So Dreamer was just going to be a house show type match, and Dreamer was going to go over. And everybody was happy with that because Swinger was talking to TNA at the time, and Swinger's the one that volunteered to put him over. So I'm like, okay, cool. And then I went with it. The night of the show, I'm talking literally the night of the show. Well, I'm getting text messages like crazy. Hopefully I'm not getting sued. The night of the show, I can't see who's texting me, but whoever it is, yeah, keep it up because I love that beep. But yeah, the night of the show, she shows up with Ronnie Gossett. And I'm like, okay, this is for those of you who don't know and is a promoter. So it's okay. He had nothing to do with GCW, but I'm like, okay, whatever, yada, yada, yada. And he was talking about he wanted to co-promote with GCW. And I said, oh, okay, all right. And he wanted, and the big thing was, the big giveaway was, he pulls me aside, he goes, hey, kid, I just want to let you know that when this thing takes off, I want you to be the announcer, to be the booker. He's blowing my head up. He's kissing my ass. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is bullshit. But then he sells Diane on how this company could flourish with a partnership because, wink, wink, he has a deal with TBS. He has a deal with Ted Turner, and they're going to put his UCW show on TBS at 6:05. And his exact words, just like Nitro. Hey, dipshit, Nitro was on Mondays.
Hey, but Taylor, when I came in that night and I saw him, what did I say? I said, what the fuck is this dude doing here? I said, man, this dude's bad fucking business, man. He's bad. I said, then you was like, he's in deals with Ms. D. I said, you better tell Ms. D he's bad business, man.
Hell yeah. And Murder was right. So they come to me, they're like, okay, we need to change the finish and of Swinger and Dreamer. And I'm like, okay. Which I don't care. I was never in love with I was never so in love with my own ideas that I couldn't change them, but I was like, okay, why are we changing it? Well, Dreamer has the UCW championship.
And watch out.
Who said that, Murder?
No, that was Larry. Larry knows.
Oh. He wants out, yeah.
Yeah, so it's out there. Yeah, Dreamer wanted out of it. So Dreamer was like, I guess, wanted to drop the UCW title to Swinger. I said, you know, let it be Swinger's burden. So, okay, that's fine. And then the whole thing gets diluted. And so I told Diane, I'm like, okay, this is how we handle it. Dreamer goes under tonight. That's fine. We don't have to acknowledge the title change live in the audience because they don't know what the fuck UCW is anyway. We just... Dreamer beats, gets beat, whatever. Then we put up on the website where people that might actually know what UCW is, hey, the UCW championship changed hands, blah, 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 blah. No, we can't do that. Okay, why can't we do that? Well, we're now going to partner with UCW, and tomorrow night, some of the GCW guys are going to go up to UCW, and they're going to work up there. I said, okay, fine. So then we did this whole thing. Oh, my God. I remember... I think it was Murder One, Navy Blue, and Scott Steele were the three guys, not together, but those are the three guys that were booked, I think, to go up there and the next night. And, of course, the show never took place. Am I right, Murder?
Of course.
That show did not take place. And I call Murder One because I'm thinking Murder's going to kill this guy. I'm like, Murder, don't be pissed, but the show got canceled. Murder says... Dude, I didn't leave my fucking house. I had a bad fuck. Didn't you say your boots smell off your bed or something?
Yeah, I said if I'm not supposed to go to this show, somebody give me a sign. And the boots fell off my shelf, and I was like, oh, that's fine enough for me. I fired up the Xbox, and, you know, that was it. I was like, fuck that then. And I swear that, like, 20, 30 minutes later, people was calling, man, this motherfucker didn't show up. He didn't show up to the whole show, and I was like, I told you.
I'll give you a better example, though. That was one example of the booking getting messed up. This is one that I've never gone public with. Murder may not even know about it, but it's one of those things. Yeah, this is a deep one. Micah Taylor came to our office, and he wanted to come in, and him and Tracy. And Micah had been great. Micah really was. He was like, really excited on board with it, and he was very, very up front. He wanted X amount of money, but we can negotiate. Okay, great. That's cool.
Now, this is
and I remember
he'd been gone for a while, and he was wanting to come back.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he had been gone. So he was, you know, he was very excited to be a team player. He would work with us in the price and all this. Okay, great. So Diane hired him. I stress that. Not that I wouldn't have, but Diane hired him. Probably for more money than I would have budgeted, not because Mike is not worth it, because he is. He's worth more. But because at the time, with the money and the budget, I was like, well, okay. But so anyway, she hired him for X amount of dollars. And it was, you know, to him, that's great. Then a few months later, not even, 2 months later, she tells me to cut him because he's making too much money and cut his storyline. And cut Tracy's and just cut him. I said, well, what should I tell them? No, nothing. Just don't book them. Well,
if I remember right, at
them?
That point, you had him pretty heavily involved in big time storylines, particularly Micah.
Yes, absolutely. With Swinger, well, and Tracy too, because Tracy was involved in that, and there was more to that that was going to be revealed. Another example, which I think this one actually cuts a little deeper, because I know David more than I know Micah. We brought in David Young. Same deal. He was hired. I don't even know what he got paid. I don't, because that was between him and her, and that was cool. I just handed him the envelopes, and I'm sure it was fair. But I remember David was cool. David and Bull, when you got those two together, it was awesome. They were coming up with ideas. We booked out. He came in August, I think. We, in September, like September 2nd, was Thursday, we booked out till the end of the year. We knew where we were going for the last show of the year in December 16th. So we were excited. And it was starting to pay off. And the whole thing was, you know, Bull and David were together. And, you know, because of the passing of Ted Allen, there was a lot of nostalgia there. That they love working together because they share Ted stories and everything. And you can really tell that there was a good vibe. And then David turns on Bull. And then we did this whole thing where David was challenging Nation for the heavyweight championship, and then Bull got involved. The whole thing was perfect. Everyone loved it. we get like a week into the final phase of the program. It's David Young versus Bo Buchanan versus Nation. And we're stirring it up in the storylines that Bo and David are full of shit and they're working together. It's all a trick. Those two are working together to try to get the belt off Nation. And you hate, and as a fan, you hate to think that about Bo, because Bo had been babyface for so long. But then Bo starts doing little things where you start thinking, maybe he is turning bad. I don't know. So anyways, the finish of that match was, how does it go? Oh, but it was Nation and David Young were throwing fists, and Bo came off the ropes to clothesline Nation from behind, but Nation saw it on the big screen, ducked down. The clothesline hit David. Nation drops, kicks Bo out of the ring. Nation pins David. And you leave wondering, did Bo really try to hit David? Or was Bo trying to, you know, blindside Nation? Crowd liked it. Everyone liked it. The boys liked it. I go backstage. Diane tells me, fire that fat piece of shit. My first reaction was, first of all, Bogey's not that fat, but no, but David's out of shape. Fire him. I'm like, well, we just hired him. We'll fire him. I'm like, well, what do you want me to tell him? Nothing. Just don't book him. So you don't want me to tell him? No, he'll forget about it. And I'm like, you know, that's crap. That's bullshit. So it was about that time I got tired of it.
Well, it's enlightening because watching it from afar and going occasionally driving down for shows and getting the results, it's like you would appear that the booker didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Right.
Because
I believe it was sabotage. Yeah, I do believe it was sabotage.
Why would the owner want to sabotage your own booker?
I think we could do a whole show on that. I mean, it's just one of those things where I think somebody once said to me, and I won't take credit for this, but it always made me think. Somebody once said to me that Bill Hughes, her ex-husband, loved wrestling, and that she used this as a emotional outlet to take it out on something he loved. I don't know if that's true, but I just know that there were so many different, like the thing, you know. Let's talk about the elephant in the room that we haven't brought up yet. April 1st, 2010, the mass exodus of top talent in GCW. Murder remembers that.
Yeah, I do.
I remember Murder
when,
went out.
Banks, Jones, those guys left?
Banks, Jones, Valentine, and J-Rod. If I'm missing somebody, forgive me, but that was the main thing. And I remember Murder went out there. He worked Nation that night, and man, that day tore it up. And Murder came back, and he's just sitting there, you know, just sitting there kind of collecting himself after the match. And I walk up to Murder, I'm like, yeah, Banks just got fired. And it was funny because Murder and Nation only went about 10. So, I mean, in the course of 10 minutes, like, the entire company changed. it was really strange. I remember Murder looking at me like, what? Murder's trying to catch his breath. Murder's like, what the fuck just happened?
Out of nowhere.
Murder, how long do we go? Holy shit.
We're going to have to do a part two because we're almost out of time on the show. And we even, you know, I wanted to also touch on some of the good things, like some of your good memories, things you were proud of there.
How much time we got, Larry?
We're down within the last couple minutes here.
Let me get one story out real quick, and I'll make it short and just give me the office if I'm going over. Ted Allen was one of my favorite people to work with. I had never met him before GCW, but I'm very glad that I did, because I was convinced that he to book him for one show. And when I did, Ted was one of the best workers I've ever seen. Ted could keep up with everybody. And I remember Kyle Matthews and Ted Allen were doing an angle. And in fact, Larry, you saw their last match.
Yeah, yeah.
It was building to... I never told anybody this. We were building up a whole thing where Ted and Kyle were actually working together. The night that Ted died was going to be the reveal, and they were scheduled to bloody up the tag champ, something fierce. And I wanted to book on September 30th Ted Allen and Kyle Matthews as the tag team champions. And I remember when I told Ted that, And I don't remember if Kyle was sitting there. I know I told Kyle too, but I don't know if it was at the same time. I remember when I told Ted, I was like, I want to do this tag thing with you and put the tag belts on you. And I remember Ted just, he smiled. He had this look. And what I'll never forget is that here's a guy in the twilight of his career. Here's a guy that's been doing it for years, for decades. And I told him about this little rinky-dink idea that I had about putting the belts on him. And he smiled, and he had this look. It was like a glow. And at that moment, you could tell that he never lost. He never lost that appeal. You know, when you first get into business and it's all exciting and it's all new, he never lost that. And I think every wrestling fan and every wrestler out there should know that you don't have to lose that. It doesn't matter how long you're in this or how many years you do it or the experience. You don't have to lose your passion. And Ted Allen never did. And that's one of the best things. That's one of the proudest moments of my career was seeing that in Ted. And it bothered me a great deal when he passed. And I know it bothered Kyle, but I just want to say, on record that if I never do anything else in the business, I'm very honored to have worked with Ted Allen at one of his last shows.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us tonight, and love to have you back so we can finish this up the right way, because it feels very cut off, but we are out of time, so.
Okay.
Thanks again for being with us. Murder, thank you. We'll be back in a couple weeks, and we're going to let the robot lady play.
This is your world champion signing off.
What a mark.
Stay classy.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.